We're ready.
I'd like to call the Rules and Ethics and Grossman Committee meeting of the Osage Nation Congress. The time is 10:50. Roll call, please.
Congressman Hamilton.
Here.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Present.
Congressman Tillman.
Here. Next item on the agenda is prayer.
Father, we come together this time to be in our heart and minds. We come together for all of God's people. These beautiful families represented and the families in need of this. We are blessing and guidance in the county of Texas. These beautiful men and women in uniform for the Navy. All these things I ask in the presence of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you. Next item is approval of the minutes. I think we have two sets. Is that correct?
Yes.
Two sets of minutes.
We'll have two sets next time as well.
Starting with the August, you want to start with the August or June 8th?
June 8th.
To approve the minutes of June 8th, 2017.
Sure, I'd be happy to open the discussion here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My interest in this particular topic, as it should be with all our members here, started in early August, or when, and I guess it was in July as well, when the issue of how many votes does it take to pass a bill into Osage law. And I think most of us have made the assumption over time that the concurrence of the majority of the members of the Osage Nation Congress meant the members present at a properly called meeting that had an adequate quorum. But it actually didn't say that. That says concurrence of the majority of the members of the Osage Nation Congress. It doesn't say present. It doesn't say entire membership. And so it came up during a vote, and the clerk of the Congress has a parliamentary opinion here I happen to see and receive with the rest of you. And she makes some good points in her paper as well. And so through this time, it's been, well, you know, we need to look at the entire document to really be able to fully decipher and interpret at least the plain language meaning of that statement of concurrence of the majority of the Osage Nation Congress. And there's several other pieces in language and types of language that describe what votes are required for various procedures that we undertake in the Congress. Different types of language are used, including the word present, entire membership, whole number of the members of Congress. And there is actually one passage where members present is actually used. So the notion that the word present was left out accidentally, or was it intentional or unintentional if the word present was not put in there? I think we've kind of operated that it was left out accidentally, but it was intended. And so we passed laws. My colleague, Congresswoman Edwards, she quoted a count of 14 laws that were passed with less than a majority of the members of Congress. So I have a paper here just to try to get to something in here. I don't plan to read this entire paper to you, but really what it did was an attempt to look at different parts of the Constitution and the different language used as it describes voting and a variety of things that the Congress can undertake. But one of the things is the Osage Nation Congress shall be composed of 12 representatives. So when you say concurrence of the majority of the members of the Osage Nation Congress, that seems to mean 12 people if you just look at that one particular sentence. Section 3 under Article 6, the 12 positions in the Osage Nation Congress. So there's at least two entries that talk about the number of members in the term Osage Nation Congress is 12. Section 9, the presence of at least two-thirds of the whole number of the members of Congress would be necessary to constitute a meeting for the exercise of its powers. Interesting, that's a different description of the members of Congress, but they use the term whole number there. I don't see how that would conflict with requiring concurrence of the majority of the members of Congress to pass a bill. At the written request, two-thirds of the members can convene Congress in special session. Such extension can we can extend a special session with the written request of two-thirds of the members. So if you had eight members at a quorum, basically all eight members would have to request the extension. So it's still possible. That's still consistent. That's not inconsistent. Use the term whole numbers, the members of Congress. Section 11, I'm skipping down to the bold type, just the bold headings only. A member may be expelled from the floor for disorderly or contemptuous behavior by a vote of two-thirds of all the members of the Osage Congress present. So in my opinion, the word present, they knew the word present. It wasn't that they didn't know of it or didn't think of it. I maintain that it was left out of the Article 6, Section 9, Article 6, Section 12 on purpose, that it was never intended to mean present, that it meant all of the members of the Osage Nation Congress. It doesn't say that. But they do use the word present. The authors did know the word present. They used the word present when described other votes. So it's conspicuously absent. The Osage Nation Congress is defined in the Constitution as being composed of 12 members. Interestingly, there are some situations to where if you had only an 8-member quorum, that there are certain things you couldn't do. For example, you could not override a veto with only 8-member quorum, because it takes 9 votes. So you wouldn't be able to override a veto if you only had 8. So it requires 3/4 or 9. And then we talk about the concurrence of 2/3 of the membership, doesn't say present, provide for another effective date. So again, it takes 2/3 or 8 to be able to provide for another effective date. Then the removal, I'm just pointing out some other issues about voting. If you had a 9-member quorum, you would not have enough votes to pass a judgment of removal. And then ultimately, proposed amendments agreed to by 5/6 of the members of Congress shall be put before the Osage people. So you'd have to have 10 votes if it's 5/6 of the members in Congress. And so there are multiple expressions of different language. I maintain that the framers of the Constitution left present out on purpose, that the intent was to require the entire membership of Congress. And I have a proposed rule I would like to make a motion to adopt by this committee, but it would require a second by a member of this committee. So perhaps we can go forward with the discussion. It's back page, this short version here. Rear back page of my handout. It's in section 5.9, right before it discusses how the vote is conducted. We'd insert a new number 4 and renumber section accordingly. A bill would require a concurrence of a majority of the entire membership of the Osage Nation Congress to be passed into Osage law. A resolution shall require an affirmative majority of those members of the Osage Nation Congress present at a properly convened session as specified by the Osage Nation Constitution and pursuant to Osage law. In section 6.1, there's a piece where the language talks about bills and resolutions following the same process as established in the rules. Section 6.1's rule change inserts accepting the number of votes required for passage as specified in section 5.9, because the vote requirement is separate. Because again, remember in the Constitution, it talks about bills, not resolutions, bills or laws. Resolutions really aren't specifically mentioned in regard to the vote count. So I felt like this allows a resolution to be voted by the majority of the members present. This can be changed, this can be amended, but ultimately I believe that the Congress needs to vote this notion up or down for rule change. This is one version of the proposed rule.
Thank you, Dr. Shaw. Congresswoman Edwards.
Move to insert a new rule 5.9, number 9. A bill as follows. A bill requires a concurrence of a majority of the entire membership of the Osage Nation Congress to pass, period. A resolution requires an affirmative majority of those members of the Osage Congress present at a properly convened session as specified by the Osage Nation Congress and pursuant to Osage law. Section 6.1, line 16. Insert after resolution, accepting the number of votes required for passage as specified in section 5.99.
Say that again, please.
I think it would be parentheses. Is it, which part, the second part?
The second part. Insert.
It's rule 6.1. And it's at line 16. Insert after resolutions, accepting the number of votes required for passage as specified in rule 5.99.
There's a motion on the floor, is there a second?
Court point of order, I thought he made the motion.
I have motion on the floor, but it had not been seconded.
We got to a second, we had a motion.
So I don't know if that was yours was an amendment or...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you make that motion, I apologize.
I heard the motion and I will second the motion for discussion.
Okay.
And so your discussion.
My discussion with his?
Mm-hmm.
I have an amendment to the motion, okay. As stated.
Discussion?
I guess I would ask to move it on that amendment. The amendment, please just allow me the discussion about how it's clear. It may very well be, but I just need to discuss.
Because instead of saying a bill will require, it now says a bill requires, and it says that it needs the entire membership of the Osage Nation Congress to be passed into Osage law. It doesn't pass into Osage law until the chief signs it, so I struck that part.
Okay.
And I struck the word shall in the second example so that it doesn't say shall, it just says requires. On rule 6.1, I just changed the section to rule, and I changed the word section in the rule to rule. And then I put 0.9, and the reason I put it at 0.9 is in number 9 is because it goes, it tells you how the voting procedures work, and it goes, so at this point it goes all through the voting procedures, and then it says in the end, you've got to have this many for it to pass.
Congressman Shaw.
The only reason I put that in line page 16, line 4, was because in the very next numbered section, they talk about the taking the vote, that the clerk tabulates the votes, but the speaker then announces the results of the vote. I thought it better to establish what qualifies as a vote to pass before they got to that section. However, it's still in there. You're talking about putting it at the end? another section.
Well, I was going to put it at 9, but if you want to, we could put, when the vote is, we could move those four sections, those four sentences in 4, then to 10. Or... So why don't I do that? But, so my, another amendment is to strike lines, rule 5.94, lines 6 through 9.
Wait. Are you amending what you have?
Uh-huh, I'm amending my amendment. I can do it. If this works, I'll move, then I'll make another motion. Because I agree with him that when you talk about the announcing of the rule, that it, then we start going back and saying, what else do you do in the vote? So I think we need to move that to the end. I agree with that.
We have a motion and an amendment, and an amendment to the amendment.
I withdraw my amendment to the amendment pending resolution of this. Okay. But I'm saying if this passes, then I agree that I will move those, want to move those four sentences down to the end.
So we have a motion with a second for an amendment.
You got to vote on hers first because hers is amending his.
Okay.
And then you'll vote on his.
I withdrew my amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to hear the executive's position on this matter?
I would like to hear that, yes, please.
Is there a motion on the floor? Are we in discussion?
The amendment? So to discuss on this amendment is what we need for discussion on.
Assistant Chief, go ahead, please.
I want to be out of order. Are you on the main motion?
We're on the amendment to the main motion.
Oh, what?
Okay. So we need a vote on the amendment to the main motion.
I want to hear the amendment.
Strike section and insert rule.
Say bill requires.
A bill requires concurrence. Instead of a bill will require, it now says a bill requires concurrence of a majority of the entire membership of the Osage Nation to pass. The resolution requires an affirmative majority of those members of the Osage Nation present at a properly convened session as specified by the Osage Nation Constitution and pursuant to Osage law. Rule 6.1 says the same. That's the same except for it says Rule 5.99, which is that.
So we're voting on the amendment. Roll call.
Congressman Hamilton?
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards?
Yes.
Congressman Tillman?
Yes.
Okay, now I have another one. Rule 5.9, line, section 4.
Hang on.
Rule 9.9.
Is this an amendment to his main motion?
No, we already voted on the main motion.
No, you voted on your amendment.
Sorry.
Not the main motion.
The main motion is what you're on now.
Is this an amendment? Yes, this is an amendment. This is a different amendment.
Okay.
Line 6. Strike. Line 6 through 9. And insert. Line 6 through 9. Mm-hmm. At a new section 10.
Could you read that for us? How it's going to read?
Mm-hmm. So number 4 will read, the speaker shall then instruct the clerk to record the vote. And then number 5 will be, no member may vote on behalf of another member. 6, while a vote is in progress, no member shall be recognized and no other business shall be transacted. 7, no explanation of any vote shall be permitted while a vote is in progress and after a vote has been cast. 8, no member, Congress employee, or other person shall visit or remain with the clerk while a vote is in progress. 9, A bill requires a concurrence of a majority of the entire membership of the Osage Nation to pass. A resolution requires an affirmative majority of those members of the Osage Nation present at a properly convened session as specified by the Osage Nation. And pursuant to Osage law. Well, there's a, there, I think you've got to have to pass in there. Now, rule.
Read that last one again, please.
You say a resolution requires an affirmative majority of those members of the Osage Constitution present at a properly convened session as specified by the Osage Nation Congress and pursuant to Osage law. Insert to pass. And then number 10 says, when the vote is completely recorded, the clerk shall advise the speaker of the result. The speaker shall announce the result to the Congress. No vote may be changed after it has been announced. So my amendment is, sorry, at the one that just passed, at the one that was just made, insert to pass after Osage law. Also at line 6, strike line 6 through 9, and insert line 6 through 9 in a new section 10.
So there's an amendment to the motion,
main
motion on the floor.
Congressman Hamilton?
Second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now you're going to the main motion.
So, I have a question about the motion. Are you, have you kept up with the amendments just made?
Yes.
I'm comfortable with it. You're comfortable with it?
Yes.
Where's
it?
Is Trey still?
Trey's right back here. Mr. Gill?
It's being called for.
I just wanted to ask.
You wanted to talk to
his take on the motion. Trey, we have a motion. And I just wanted to ask what your take on it. It's been amended from the original motion.
Right, but they're doing essentially the same thing, which is just changing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I reviewed Congressman Shaw's this morning, and the format is fine. There's nothing wrong with the length of changes that I've heard have been made are fine as well. It just comes down to ultimately this body has to make a decision which way this is going to be interpreted. It's up for interpretation. The length of the Constitution is inconsistent. Question then becomes, well, do they mean the whole number of the members of Congress and pass it to pass legislation, or do they mean the whole number of the members present to agree to the quorum? And like that's why I've recommended it to be in the rules, because if it's up for interpretation, intelligent minds can differ on it. But as far as the language of this amendment, it's fine.
Congressman Edwards.
My take on it is when they meant Congress present, they said Congressman was present. If you read it any other way, there are other places where it doesn't say the whole members of Congress. It says the members, and nobody has interpreted removal must be concurred upon by 5/6 of the members of the Osage Nation Congress. No one that I hear says. That means 5/6 of the members present.
It says 9 votes, doesn't it?
Concurrence of 5/6 of the members of the Osage Nation Congress is required for a judgment of removal. and we've consistently held to that. So I think the idea that we're trying to put present in where present doesn't exist is wrong, and I thank you for getting this put together.
We would like to recognize Congressman Walker.
Thank you, Chairman. I've stated my opinion and what I believe, so I'm not going to rehash that again. Trey has indicated previously that he has done some additional research, and I would be interested in hearing what his conclusion, what his professional opinion is, and I think he's right. You know, intelligent minds or regular old plain old minds can differ on this, and it is consistent in the Constitution. So rather than rehash my opinions and my thoughts, I would like to hear. I believe that its members are present, and the 11 years in precedent with those players involved is it's a pretty important part of the puzzle, I think. But Mr. Gill, I would be interested, Chairman, if Mr. Gill
sure
at least express to the committee what he discovered or what his opinion is based on his recent research.
Council, Mr. Gill.
Thank you. So most of my research is surrounded around, you know, what would a federal court look at if they're interpreting statutory language or constitutional language. They first say that you're supposed to look at the plain meaning of the language of the statute. And if it's clear from the plain meaning of the statute, then that should be, you know, the applicable interpretation. If it's not clear, then you go to the whole document and you read the document as a whole and take all the provisions together so that it does not come to some, as our Supreme Court said, absurd conclusion. If that does not give you the answer, then it is up for interpretation of the court. And they might use things like legislative intent to try and find out, you know, some more information about what was the intent of that provision. What did they intend? Did they intend 7 votes or a majority of the members total? Or did they intend, you know, a majority of the quorum present? So, and we don't have any clarification on that at this point. That's why I've recommended what we're doing right here. Guys debated. You're sitting in the position of a court right now until this issue gets thrown to the court to interpret the language of the Constitution because it is not completely clear.
Thank you, Mr. Gill. Congresswoman Edwards.
I just want to say that I believe that I'm correct in saying that in the many years that the Rules and Ethics Committee has existed, which is since the beginning, that this has never been discussed in that committee. To my knowledge, I don't remember it ever being discussed in Congress. So when you say, well, we did it this way, I don't think we ever consciously made a decision that we were doing it that way. It was never brought to our attention. And I will also say that I have drafted bills that will ratify any of those votes that were taken that only passed by a 6-5 vote, so we can correct that. I think we should correct it, because I think we've gone down the wrong path. Unknowingly, I would say, because this is the first time we've really, that I recall, had this discussion. Now, I do think we had a discussion, certainly, of how many people, I know we had a discussion on how many people it was going to take to, for the judgment of removal, and we agreed that it was 10, and not everybody was there every day that we heard. And I can't remember if everyone was there when we took the vote, but we consciously decided that it was a 10 people had to approve that, as we have with the constitutional amendments. I can't remember what they say, but certainly for the removal.
Congressman Wyman.
I have a couple of things. The most compelling reason to me to pass a rule out like this is in the language of the Constitution, and one, I think it's been pointed out here on removal, it says 5/6 of the members of Congress. It doesn't say members present, but I don't believe we would ever go through a removal proceeding where we wouldn't make that count be 10 members. I don't believe that we would ever say, oh, it's just who showed up today, because it's important. And our legislation, the laws we pass for the Osage Nation are just as important as that. So I support this. I just want to ask one question, and because I have not thought, I like to think through things to see maybe what the snags would be. And I was wondering if the move-in or the Congressman Shaw has thought through any repercussions of not applying the same standard to a resolution, because a resolution is subject to veto override also. I'd like to hear some discussion on that, what your thoughts were about not applying this to resolutions. I realize the language of the Constitution says laws. I'm from that. But are there any downsides to not holding the same standard for resolutions? That's my question.
I'm going to think on that for a second, sure. But I got to recognize Assistant Principal Chief, who's been patient. Assistant Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Members of Congress, I'll do my best not to read this whole thing. I want to put a few things up. I do want to go to some level of detail in it. I took the time to call Jean Dennison and ask her for a transcript of one of the last meetings of the Reform Commission. And this is in the very last days when the pressure was on. They were getting pressed for time. Congressman Mason always says they're compressed. And if any member of Congress read that transcript and read the place where they were within days of sending this to the council, I'm hard-pressed to believe that you would come away with the conclusion that some of these things were discussed in detail. I think you would actually come to an opposite conclusion. And the opposite conclusion is what you see in all of these different methods by which the Constitution describes the amount of votes needed and how everyone seems to agree that there are several different ways that they do it. That goes hand in hand with an explanation that the Reform Commission was under pressure and did a lot of things, if you'll excuse the expression, in a hurry, right at the last. Congressman Shaw, who I respect immensely, has stated that he believes that they purposefully left present out. There's no evidence for that that's been presented. In the entire transcript of all the Reform Commission meetings are available. It isn't going to be very tough to go back and find where they said, well, are we going to have a majority of members present, or are we going to have a requirement for seven? Having said that, Mr. Gill brings up the issue of how federal courts interpret statutes and how they interpret constitutions. I want to share with the committee and the other members of Congress what our court says. Our court says, and I quote verbatim, "We evaluate constitutional provisions by reviewing the document as a whole, considering each provision as it relates to the others, and giving each word its plain meaning when read in context to avoid absurd or inconsistent results." That's what our court says. We do not contest the plain meaning of the passage. That should be clear to anyone. But when we read it in the context of the Constitution as a whole, as a provision relating to other provisions, and in a way that avoids absurd or inconsistent results, all resulting conclusions point to an inference of members present. We admit it's an inference, but at the end of the day, there's two ways to look at this. One is the way Congress is looking at it now, and the other is the way Congress looked at it for 11 years. The way Congress looked at it for 11 years, it didn't produce inconsistent results. It didn't produce absurdities. But the new one does. First of all, new interpretation directly conflicts with the language in Article 7, Section 6. It says, whenever the legislature shall be equally divided, the assistant principal chief shall cast the deciding vote. That's a very wide point. Whenever. But the Congress would have us believe, now this interpretation rather would have us believe, that it isn't whenever. It's when it's 6-6. It's not when it's 5-5. It's not when it's 4-4. It's only when it's 6-6. That is not whenever. Why didn't they put whenever in if they intended for it to be 7 votes? That's an absurd conclusion or an inconsistent result. You can take your pick. When the provisions are read together, it makes sense that the framers anticipated the situation where when there may only be 8 members of Congress present in a session, but kept the provision that the assistant chief shall break the tie, which means that there could be a 4-4 tie. It could exist. It wouldn't be a failure. It's a tie. Consider this scenario. If the Constitution is interpreted to always require 7 votes of Congress members to pass a bill, the situation is ripe for abuse. In the event of a 6-6 tie, under the Congress's interpretation, any one Congress member has only to leave the room to defeat the bill if they were going to vote no. That's a 6 yes, 5 no, and it fails. Whereby staying and voting no, the bill passes if the APC votes yes. The new interpretation gives more power to absence than it does to being present and voting no, and that is an absurd conclusion. Now, I put in a footnote here that it's long been recognized that when an affirmative supermajority is required, an absence is equal to a no vote. We all understand that when it's veto time, or time to consider the override of the veto. But that's not, here it's not equal to it. It's more powerful than that. There's another point. Why does the Constitution use the word majority, a mathematical calculation intended to determine whether a given number of votes is equal to or greater than, quote, the number greater than half of any total? That's from Black's Law Dictionary. The number greater than half of any total. The Congress says the number is 7, period. No calculation needed. That's an inconsistent result. If the framers intended to require 7 votes to pass a bill, they would have said so, and in the same manner that they specified exact numbers in the other provisions in the Constitution. In Standing Bear versus Pratt, the Supreme Court concluded that the small size of our government, the straightforward simplicity of our Constitution present both the opportunities and the challenges. I think that might be something we can all agree on. And abiding objective of this court in interpreting our Constitution is to focus on that economy of size and not be drawn into overly complex legalistic approach to dispute resolution that obscures common sense principles and provides and provisions that people adopted in their Constitution. If we review the document as a whole, consider each provision, and give the words its plain meanings when read in context, avoiding absurd and inconsistent results, we believe the implied language members present as practiced by the Congress for 11 years represents a much simpler answer than Congress's recent interpretation. If you're going to go for simplicity, what we did for 11 years was simple. If you want to go for something complex, adopt this. It is more complex. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee, thank you for your attention and consideration of our position.
Thank you, Assistant Chief, Congresswoman Edwards.
In response to Congresswoman Whitehorn's question, I think one of the upsides, I guess, is that
We attempted to make resolutions binding by law, you recall that, and that was defeated. So this body doesn't want resolutions to be binding. They want them to be suggestions. So since they're not binding, the fact that you have a lesser number of people voting is a consideration. The other thing I want to say is that under this interpretation that's being promoted by the administration, four members of Congress could pass a law. Four members of Congress could pass a law. That's one third of the body. And the other thing is that special sessions, which we've been having repeatedly, you might ask whether that was what contemplated by the framers. We would have a special session sometimes every 2 weeks. But those sessions have been called when members of Congress have said we cannot attend those dates. And I think there's a real concern when the principal chief calls a session on dates when he knows that members of Congress cannot attend. It's one of the reasons we had to implement the law that said you've got to give us a certain number of days to be prepared, because this is not a full-time job. People don't live minutes from the seat of government, and I don't think it would be proper for one branch of government to manipulate a system, find four members of Congress that can attend a session, and then pass a law. Or worse, repeal many, many, many laws.
Thank you. Congressman Schell.
Let me respond to my colleague, Congressman Whitehorn. I think most of us would agree that there are substantial differences between the impact on the Osage Nation between a resolution and Osage law. You know, we've all said time and time again, resolutions aren't binding. And I think lowering the threshold for resolutions is very much in order. There's a lot of housekeeping resolutions that we're required to pass. And I think to apply the more stringent standard of majority of the entire membership would be excessive for resolutions, if you look at the breadth of the resolutions that we pass. So that's the reason why I had a separate threshold for resolutions. I certainly acknowledge anyone's difference of opinion on that, but I felt like it needed to be specified in there because our rules did say that bills and resolutions, the procedure on voting would be the same. So part of the rule change addresses that. Certainly before this proposed rule change would go out or on the floor of Congress, it could be changed to have them both treated the same, but that was the explanation why I had a different. As far as the absurd results and an absence having more power than a no vote, you know, we have a sergeant at arms who really kind of notifies us when we have meetings, right? And it's kind of been, there's a functional component to the sergeant at arms. But early on, the sergeant-at-arms may have had a more physical, aggressive role to when congressmen were trying to leave the chambers or trying to avoid a vote on an important bill. And in fact, the speaker would be well within her rights that if someone tried to walk out at the beginning or before a vote to have to postpone the vote or a recess until that congressman or congresswoman were physically, if necessary, brought back into the chambers. We don't do that because we're professional people and we don't resort to that, but theoretically, I suppose it could happen, but there are tools available to the speaker and to this Congress to either table the vote until the call of the speaker. There are maneuvers that can be happened, compel a congressman who's exited the chambers to return, even physically, I mean, it can be done and has been done. So we just don't do it. It gets absurd because we've never done it because our Congress people are elected officials. There may be, at times there could potentially be less than 12 congressmen. I think 12 is the ideal number, and we're gonna have 12 99.9% of the time, but if a congressman were removed by death, resignation, or removal for a period of time, particularly if it's less than 6 months before the election, as I recall, I can't remember if that's in our election code, but we may be less than 12 congressmen for a period of time. So rather than specify seven, theoretically, if you had 10 or 11 congressmen because of resignation or removal or death, I think still establishing a majority is not inconsistent with that possible scenario. I don't know if that has happened during these years, but we're projecting the future, 20, 30, 50 years in the future. So it could happen that for a period of time we're less than 12. And so using the term majority instead of specifying 7 helps to allow for that.
Anyone else? Any thoughts or comments? Back to the main motion on the floor, Congressman.
Yes, Hamilton. Point of clarity. We're getting ready to vote on this motion. I understand what a majority is, but now what is the concurrence of a majority? Is that still saying 7 votes is needed? Is that what we're basically saying in this motion? That if we vote yes, that's what we're going. That's what we're proposing.
Yes.
Okay. Which is sticking to the Constitution.
Yes. In the parliamentarian opinion.
Okay. And then it's through this to the floor of Congress.
Yeah. Motion on the floor been presented. We have a second.
Congressman Hamilton?
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards?
Yes.
Congressman Tillman?
Yes. Motion passes.
Can I ask a question? Are we going to have some more meetings? And thank you for having this meeting, Rob.
Yes.
Right off the back, we have more meetings like this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Move to adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Shaw, for doing this.
Thank you for your thoughtful bit.
I was looking at your
book. Okay.
Take that.